तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तुमाविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। We'll chant verses 38 till 8, chapter 4.
नहि ज्ञानेन सदृशम् नहि ज्ञानेन सदृशम् पवित्रमिह विद्यते पवित्रमिह विद्यते तत्स्वयं योगसंसिद्धः तत्स्वयं योगसंसिद्धः कालेनात्मनि विन्दति कालेनात्मनि विन्दति। नहि ज्ञानेन सदृशम् पवित्रमिह विद्यते तत्स्वयं योगसंसिद्धः कालेनात्मनि विन्दति। श्रद्धावान् लभते ज्ञानम् श्रद्धावान् लभते ज्ञानम् तत्परः संयतेन्द्रियः तत्परः संयतेन्द्रियः ज्ञानं लब्ध्वा परां शान्तिम् ज्ञानं लब्ध्वा परां शान्तिम् चिरेनाधिगच्छति चिरेनाधिगच्छति। श्रद्धावान् लभते ज्ञानं तत्परसंयतेन्द्रियः ज्ञानं लब्ध्वा परां शान्तिम् अचिरेणाधिगच्छति। अज्ञश्चाशब्दधानश्च संशयात्मा विनश्यति। नायं लोकोऽस्ति न परः नायं लोकोऽस्ति न परः न सुखं संशयात्मनः न सुखं संशयात्मनः। अज्ञश्चाशब्दधानश्च संशयात्मा विनश्यति। नायं लोकोऽस्ति न परः न सुखं संशयात्मनः। योगसंन्यस्तकर्माणम् योगसंन्यस्तकर्माणम् ज्ञानसञ्चिन्नसंशयन् ज्ञानसञ्चिन्नसंशयन् आत्मवन्तं न कर्माणि
आत्मवन्तं न कर्माणि
निबध्नन्ति धनञ्जय निबध्नन्ति धनञ्जय। योगसंन्यस्तकर्माणम् ज्ञानसञ्चिन्नसंशयन् आत्मवन्तं न कर्माणि निबध्नन्ति धनञ्जय। तस्मादज्ञानसम्भूतम् तस्मादज्ञानसम्भूतम् ह्रस्तं ज्ञानसिनात्मनः ह्रस्तं ज्ञानासिनात्मनः। चिद्वैनं संशयं योगम् चिद्वैनं संशयं योगम् आदिष्टोतिष्ठ भारत आदिष्टोतिष्ठ भारत। तस्मादज्ञानसम्भूतम् ह्रस्तं ज्ञानासिनात्मनः चिद्वैनं संशयं योगम् आदिष्टोतिष्ठ भारत।
Verse number 39, he says, he who has Shraddha, who is devoted, who has subdued his senses, gains knowledge. Shraddha mahate jnanam. A person should have Shraddha and he should consider me as tatpara, devoted, and he should be jitendriya, one who has controlled his senses. Such a person, having attained the knowledge here long, gains supreme peace. So he talks about jitendriya, meaning conquering the senses. We said this in the previous class when we met. Whenever we talk about conquering, whatever conquest it might be, conquest is only in gaining the knowledge about that rather than forcefully trying to control it. Like for example, we didn't know much about lightning, thunder and all this. So we were giving all sorts of stories. Indra, Thunderbolt. So many stories are given for lightning and thunder and all this. But when science started understanding what is thunder, what is lightning, then that understanding, that knowledge becomes power in the hands of people who have understood it. They are able to use that and in their life. So anything when you know, it becomes subservient to you. Anything when you don't know, you become subservient to it. That is why they say knowledge is power. So many things like anger in us, we don't understand anger. We don't know anger. When we say yes, I know that I have anger, we don't know beyond that. We don't know what anger does to us. When anger comes, what happens to our body? Immediately it sends out signal to our legs and hands. So many things are happening to us. We are not able to talk properly. So are we aware of all those things? If we can stand apart and watch anger, when anger comes, what happens is most of us give importance to the person who, according to us, instigated this anger in us. Right? This fellow, this person, if he or she comes in front of me, I get angry. So you start focusing on that person, seldom do you focus on the anger. No one can create anger from outside. The anger is inside you. The person is making you know that it is coming from inside of you. But the problem is we seldom look at anger. The moment you can start looking at anger, this is what we call as witnessing, dhyana. In dhyana, you are witnessing. So when you do dhyana on anger, not on the person who made you angry. Usually what happens when anger comes, we are thinking about that fellow. What a stupid fellow he is, how he does these things to make me angry, etc. But we seldom look at anger, our own anger. Right? More we start looking at it, and the more we start knowing it fully, the moment we know it fully, it leaves us. We gain control over it rather than anger having control over us. Similarly, senses also. There is nothing to elaborate. See, basically what they are saying is,
small example, like we get some eye. Sometimes we get very irritated with this, what the staff does.
See, when any emotion comes, we seldom stand apart. We are actually washed away by that emotion. Whether it is greed or lust or anger, whatever it might be, when the emotion comes, it just washes away. We identify with it and we are washed away. Two things we do. One is we suppress that emotion. Judging that emotion as negative, we suppress that emotion. Or we get identified with that emotion and get washed away with the emotion. These are the two things we do. Similarly, senses also same thing. Either we identify with it and start indulging in it, or that is what we call as bhoga. Or the other thing that we do is we say no, this is bad, and we suppress over the senses. We don't contact. We don't give it a contact. We suppress it in the name of control, and that also is another extreme. So therefore, what are you supposed to do to gain control over your senses? What are you supposed to do to gain control over your anger? What are you supposed to do to gain control over your lust or any emotion for that matter? Stand apart and watch that emotion as much as you can. Understand it in its entirety. When you look at it in its entirety, when you stand apart and watch at it, then what happens is, you have a complete picture of it. You've seen it fully. When you've seen it fully, it becomes subservient to you. You know about it, how it comes, where it goes, how it attacks the system, how your hands and legs gets ready, how you start stammering, how you start saying something which you should not say. Say all these things when you observe. Then you clearly see how The nature of anger works. Thereafter, anger becomes subservient. There is no other way. That is why, if you see in our system, for example, what does science do? How does science make everything subservient to it? By observing. When a scientist goes to the laboratory, he is observing all the changes that is happening. Therefore, he understands it fully and then he uses it for the welfare of the whole world. Exactly like that, he is doing a different kind of a dhyan. We are doing dhyan on our own emotions. When you do that, then you gain control over it. So really speaking, when you say control, 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 control comes when you contact consciously. When you run away from it, you will not gain control. When you indulge in it, then also you do not have control. You contact consciously. So really speaking, that is why whenever you contact any object, it is an opportunity for you to face it, look at it, observe it, do dhyanam over it, so that what happens is, you know that, yes, this is what it is fully. You know, whenever you look at anything and you've not looked at it fully. So that secret thing, that thing that you have not experienced, that curiosity still lingers. You want to go over it again and again and again. Right? When you know fully, then that curiosity is not there. It's very, very interesting. So the whole thing is, we don't understand it fully. We don't look at it totally. The moment you see a tree, but you are seeing a ghost where the tree is. Right? Some people are overpowered by the thought of the ghost and they are creating all sorts of imaginations. Others, out of fear, have left the scene. If you can just stay put there and watch it, then slowly you will see tree there and not ghost. Then the fear, everything is conquered. Thereafter, whenever you go there, no fear comes, because you understood that it is only tree and not ghost. So this is the whole thing. Whenever you have a clear knowledge of something, you have control over it. When you don't have clear knowledge about it, you have no control over it. That's all. So therefore, first gain that control. And then he says, Shraddhavan. Shraddha is the word. In fact, sense control and Shraddha, both are misunderstood very often. When you say Shraddha, what is Shraddha? A lot of us say Shraddha is belief or faith. Shraddha is not belief or faith as it is understood generally. Shraddha is something very deep. This belief and faith that we talk about is only skin deep. You say, in fact, a lot of us have doubts and indecisions. We are not sure. But we can't live with doubt. Can you live with doubt all the time? You can't. Therefore, what you do? You accept or reject. You have acceptance. Yes, this is my father. Yes, this is my mother. Yes, this is my this. Yes, I will get up in the morning. Etc., etc. The little bit, if you scratch their faith, they become exposed. They get exposed. If you see the Shraddha that Meera had on Krishna, or the Shraddha that Radha had, if you go deeply in them, any kind of stories you may give, their devotion to Krishna cannot be removed. But in our case, we say we believe in Krishna. But if somebody comes and gives a story about Krishna, which probably you didn't know, oh, this is Krishna, then your faith is gone. That is why we are told, don't listen to the opposite side. If your Shraddha is so strong, what will happen even if you listen to the opposite side? How it could be overpowered? It means that your Shraddha is not really Shraddha. It is just skin deep. It is not really deep. So, to practical level to live, we say, I believe in God. On one hand, we say we believe in God. On the other hand, what are we doing? going on craving and attaching and saving for next 10 generations. If you really believe in God, how can you do such thing? How can you be attached to the future? You understand? On one side we say, oh no, no, there is God, there is supreme power, that is taking care of everything, that is what is giving us everything, all these things. On the other hand, we are also attached to the future. One side we say there is bhakti in me, on the other side we have fear. What will happen to me? How can bhakti and fear go together? Shraddha is being completely open. Neither accepting nor rejecting. Shraddha is a deep faith where you want to know, you understand that I don't know, and you want to know, and when you want to know, you don't conclude. This is what I want to know, that is what I want to know what the truth is. When I don't know what the truth is, how can I conclude this way or that way? So I have to be completely open and surrender, and whichever way comes, I look at it. By looking at it objectively, I become eligible to know the truth as it is. So that is why he says, Shraddhaman Labhate Jnana. If you have already started believing, then what happens is you say, okay, this is what truth is, this is not truth. When you don't know the truth, how do you start believing that this is truth? Are you with me? So when you go deep, it is Shraddha. When you stay at the superficial level, there is what we call as faith, which can be easily overthrown. That's why I gave you the example last week when we discussed about Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. Ramakrishna Paramahamsa's life, it is said, there was a person called I recollect his name. He used to go and argue with so many people. He used to go and argue with so many people that there is no God. Keshav Chandra. He used to go and argue that there is no God. And he used to win over through his logic all these people who believed in God. Right? So his turn came to Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. So many people got together to see what is happening now. Will Ramakrishna win or will Keshav Chandra win?
So beautiful chapter in this book called Mathur. The very nice book written by Rajiv Malhotra. Beautiful chapter about your discussion.
So there, Keshav Chandra goes on giving logics about how there is no God. As he is talking with so much of logic, Ramakrishna started dancing. When he starts dancing, Keshav Chandra gets, he says, what is this, yeah? You are supposed to answer me logically, not dance like this. He says, no, you continue. And he started dancing more and more. Then when he finished, he said, now what is your argument? What is your logic? He comes and hugs Keshav Chandra and says, this itself is a proof that there is God. Say, what rubbish? Give me some proof. He says, see, who better than God can argue against himself that he doesn't exist? This itself proves that you are God. He says, Keshav Chandra sees the purity with which Ramakrishna hugged and said those words. So he says, your Shraddha is very deep. I cannot use any amount of logic to dislodge your Shraddha. The fact that you showed so much of love on me shows that you have seen God, you know God. Though I have not seen God, I now believe that there is God, which cannot be disproved by logic or proved by logic. This story is only trying to tell that the Shraddha that Ramakrishna had, he converted the whole thing by saying, who else can argue against God so good than God himself? For which Keshav Chandra had no logic. The supreme most logical person has to be God. And you are that person who is so beautifully arguing. So God can argue against himself also. God can argue for himself also. Go to the best lawyer. you surrender to him, he can argue for you. If you didn't go to him, if your opponent had the lawyer instead of you, he will prove you wrong or right, whatever, right? So logic is not something that can prove whether there is God or there is no God. But logic can disturb somebody's faith if it is superficial. But if somebody's faith is very, very deep, that cannot be dislodged. So, if you basically see here, he's saying if you have such shraddha that I don't know the truth, I want to know the truth, then when the teacher tells you something, you are like open book, you are ready to experiment it. Are you with me? You are ready to experiment. And when you experiment, you get there. Or you know that this will not take me there, or it will take you there. But other people who go on doubting, they won't take steps. Because when you go on doubting, what happens? You are not going to take a step forward. When you don't take a step forward, you are not going to reach there. This is the problem with this. You keep on doubting. If something serious happens, what will a doubtful mind do? Should I go this side or should I go this side? Should I go this side or should I go this side? He will stagnate, and what will happen? That seriousness will start growing further and destroy him. Take a decision. You understand? Shraddha on, what will you do? I don't know. But there is in front of me something very serious. So now what do I have to do? I have to go and surrender to the doctor or whosoever knows, lawyer, whatever may be the case. Then whatever the doctor or lawyer says, he will put it into practice. He will benefit. Shraddhavan labhate jnanam tat paraha. That is supreme. I must get to the truth. I don't know the truth. Such a person attains knowledge. Having attained knowledge, he along gains the supreme peace. The peace that we experience today is not supreme peace. Because the moment it comes, it goes away. The peace that he is talking about here is that peace which is ultimate, which is not interrupted by dukkha. Verse number 40. Ajnyascha shraddhadhanascha Ajnyascha shraddhadhanascha Samshayatma vinashyati Samshayatma vinashyati Nayam lokosti na paraha
Nayam lokosti na paraha
Nasukam samshayatmanaha
Nasukam
samshayatmanaha Ajnyascha shraddhadhanascha Samshayatma vinashyati Nayam lokosti The ignorant person, devoid of Shraddha, one who does not have the Shraddha, the doubting self is ruined. There is neither this world nor the other, nor happiness for the doubting self. So this is what he is talking about here. If you are a Shraddhavan, you get that knowledge. If you are not Shraddhavan, then what happens? What will a doubting self do? A fellow who keeps on doubting will destroy himself. See, to achieve anything, you need willpower. You need to be decisive. To destroy yourself, if you are indecisive, you will destroy yourself. To be or not to be? That is the question. Very famously said by Shakespeare. What did that fellow do? Hamlet. He did not kill his uncle. Because when he got an opportunity to kill his uncle, he said, if I kill now, my uncle is praying, he'll go to heaven. I should not kill him. To be or not to be? To be or not to be? All the time, he was like that. Therefore, finally, what happened to him? Finished. So, he just says here, indecisive mind left to itself perishes soon. Ignorant, devoid of Shraddha, the doubting self is ruined. In fact, all of us, like I said, at the superficial level, we are believers. But deep inside, we are all doubting selves. Like a child, when it holds on, when the child holds on to the hands of a father, the father, whichever side the child takes, child is taken by the father, child just goes. Child is not worried about accident, child is not worried about anything. Father is there. It is holding on to father's hands without any doubt. But we are not like that. We have doubt. Maybe this will do, maybe this will not do. When we keep on having this kind of indecision, then we destroy ourselves. In fact, the worst thing to have is this doubts and indecisions. More indecisive we are, the sooner we destroy ourselves. So what really ruins us is, we see, many times what happens is, a doubting self is worried about committing a mistake. Indecisive mind is worried about making a mistake. A fellow who is worried about making a mistake never takes the step. The fact that he didn't take a step, he never reaches the goal. But the fellow who takes the step, and even if it goes mistake, he can correct. Correction can happen to mistakes. Correction cannot happen to inaction. Indecisive self gives itself to inactivity. Therefore, it never reaches anywhere. Whereas, a guy, after having thought about, plunges to act. He may commit mistakes, but the fact that he has the willpower to reach there, when he commits mistakes, he corrects the course. This is the problem with us. In fact, many of us, like I said before, we keep on asking questions. We are not asking questions to pursue the path. We are asking questions to postpone our actions. Going on doubting, doubting, doubting. Vidhi pranipatena pariprashnena seva. After having questioned and all that, now plunge. That plunging will happen when you have shraddha. Otherwise, you will be scared of committing a mistake. A fellow who is worried about committing a mistake never succeeds. And a fellow who never learns from mistake, he also never succeeds. So when you say shraddha, it is firmness, consistent approach, inquiring mind, pursuing the path consciously. That consciousness, awareness is there. That is why course correction happens. So the ignorant, devoid of shraddha, doubting self is ruined. There is neither this world. If you are doubting self, you don't enjoy this world also. In this world also, you cannot be successful. Even to be successful in this world, you need to be determined self. You cannot be doubting self. Isn't it? All the time doubting. Should I take left side or right side? Constantly worrying. Split personality. You take the decision to go left, and the mind says, no, you should have gone right. Then he thinks about going right. A lot of us are like that. We want to go ahead, the mind says, I think you're right. We'll stop. We're waiting for the mind to say, you will not die. Such a thing never happens. This is the problem. Two steps this side, two steps this side. Two steps this side, two steps. So, end of the day, where are you?
Still there.
Still wherever you started. So to be successful in the world also, you need to be a determined self and not doubting self. Not the other. Not the other means the Atma in the spiritual world. In the spiritual world also you don't get anywhere. Not happiness for the doubting self. Doubting self will be constantly tormented with worries and anxieties. He cannot be happy. So therefore, what is required to pursue Atma is a firm asamshaya Atma, not samshaya Atma. All of us are samshaya Atmas. We want the world also, we want the God also. It's not possible. You either serve heaven or you serve God. You can't serve both. But we have some share. What if after joining the ashram and everything, what if I don't reach God? I have missed my get-togethers. I have missed my marriage weddings. You understand? So you want this also? You want? So when you are in marriage, I missed my class. You are not there in marriage also. Physically you are there, but you are not experiencing the joy. You come from there, oh, I missed marriage. When you are there, your mind is here. When you are here, your mind is there. You cannot be happy. Nor happiness for the devotees. So to achieve anything, you need Shraddha, whether it is the worldly or spiritual. And spirituality requires much more Shraddha. To become completely open, to give yourself to experimentation. And only a person who gives himself to experimentation achieves the truth, not everyone. Yoga sanyasta karmanam, yoga sanyasta karmanam, jnana sanchinna samshayam, jnana sanchinna samshayam, atma bandham na karmani, atma bandham na karmani, nibadnanti dhananjaya, nibadnanti dhananjaya, yoga sanyasta karmanam, jnana sanchinna samshayam, atma bandham na karmani, nibadnanti. He who has renounced actions by yoga. Yoga sanyasta karmana. He who has renounced actions by yoga, whose doubts are rent asunder by knowledge, who is paused in the self, actions do not bind him, O Dhananjaya. Dhananjaya means winner of wealth, which is addressing Arjuna. O Arjuna, he who has renounced actions by yoga. What is this renouncing actions by yoga? His entire chapter is the jnana karma sannyasa. Karma is in between jnana and sannyasa. In other words, jnana karma sannyasa. Our problem is, there is no jnana preceding our karma. When there is jnana preceding karma, it results in sannyasa. It results in liberation. When jnana doesn't precede karma, it doesn't result in sannyasa. That is the problem. We think by giving up action we can get liberation. You can't get liberation by giving up action. You can get liberation by taking up action with knowledge. So yoga, when you attain, when you identify with the higher and do the actions, you become liberated from the action, whose doubts are rent asunder by knowledge. The doubts are removed by knowledge, awareness of the higher. When your intellect becomes firm, mind is not wavering. It keeps you on the path towards the higher, and you perform actions giving up kartrutva. When you perform actions giving up kartrutva, you slowly, slowly liberate from the thraldom of the samsara and reach the atma. He says, who is poised in the self, actions do not bind him. Actions bind when it is devoid of knowledge, when it is devoid of awareness. Actions don't bind when it is accompanied with awareness. This is all he wants to say, Lord Krishna, in this entire chapter. He's been saying this only. Jnana karma sannyasa yoga. Don't renounce action. straight away, because you have kartrutva. Now with knowledge, you renounce the kartrutva. When kartrutva is gone, the karma phala is gone. As long as kartrutva is there, whether you do action or don't do action, karma phala will be there. Because when you don't do action also, I am not doing is there. I am not doing action will have its phala. I am doing action will have its phala. And I am not the doer, where is the question of phala? This is the concept that Lord Krishna is trying to give here. So all that he is saying here is, Arjuna, you are trying to run away from the battle, keeping the kartrutva very much alive. Instead, dissolve the kartrutva with knowledge by questioning yourself as to who is this person who is trying to run away. The moment you question the fundamental, then you really see that this kartrutva itself is a fiction. And dissolving the kartrutva, even if you are engaging yourself in this action, what you call as gora karma, which is fighting on the battlefield and killing so many people, not all of them are very bad people. In fact, some of them are really, really good people, like Bhishma and Drona. So even if you are killing such people, but you are doing it without kartrutva, since you are doing it without kartrutva, there is no karma phala, there is no bondage, nothing. So it is not doing that frees you from karma phala. It is not having kartrutva that frees you from karma phala. Remember this. So whether you do, whether you don't do, doesn't matter. This is what we discussed before also. You may practice simplicity, but deep inside kartrutva is there. Oh, why are you not wearing any jewel? Pearl is not that bad. You should also have some. You want people to go and say these things. Kartrutva. Suddenly he's become very silent. Why have you become silent? And you will become even more silent. Basically inside, kartrutva is very much alive. So with kartrutva, even if you keep silent, you are going to have karma phala, agitations. But without kartrutva, even if you continue talking, there is no agitations, no karma phala. This is what Krishna is saying. The problem with us is we always identify with doing as having results, not the kartrutva. The problem is in diagnosing. When you go to a doctor, if he diagnoses wrongly, he'll give medication wrongly for the disease that he diagnosed, which you might not have, isn't it? But if he's diagnosed your disease correctly, then simple. The whole thing is in diagnosing the disease. Krishna did the diagnosis in the second chapter. Very clearly, when Arjuna was talking, he was just listening to him. Very clearly he has diagnosed what the problem is. The problem is kartrutva. How can I kill Bhishma? How can I kill Drona? Like we say, I have given birth to my child. When we say, I have given birth to my child, we have given birth to my child, our child. If husband and wife is saying that, then the nature will be laughing at them. You gave birth? Achha. Were you not just an instrument? Is it not me? When the kama vasana took over you, did you have real choice there? You understand? To say that I gave birth, it is brahmacharya that you can practice when you have become free from kama vasana. Giving birth happens as a result of the nature. Nature used you as an instrument for it to propitiate itself. Are you with me? Things are happening through us. See, when you are indisciplined, the germs use your body to propitiate themselves. you become an easy instrument in their hands. Isn't it? It's exactly like that. When you have that weakness in you, the nature is propitiating itself through you. So to say that I gave birth to my son, I gave birth to my daughter, I gave birth, I has no meaning. Today, science has developed so much that even when a man is dead, without man being alive, son could be born. Isn't it? The seed can be preserved. After many, many years later, it could be injected and his son could be born. So to say that I gave birth, so nature will be laughing at us. So the moment you clearly question through knowledge, that's what he's saying. Through knowledge, you remove all the doubts. The problem is we don't inquire. We don't inquire the fundamentals. The moment you go to the fundamentals and inquire, there won't be any problem. Many things we don't inquire the fundamentals. Fundamentally we accept it. As if that is true. You are sleeping. When you are sleeping also, breathing is going on. Blood circulation is going on. Hair growth is happening. Nail growth is happening. So many things are happening. Are you going inside and doing it? Who's doing it? Nature. So this is what Krishna has been emphasizing in this whole chapter. In fact, in the third chapter onwards, all the more in this chapter. He's just saying that understand that you are a karta. Prakriti is the karta. Unnecessarily, due to ignorance, you identify with that and say that I am karta. The moment you become karta, then there is paap and punya. In fact, from Vedanta point of view, both paap and punya are paap. In one of the verses when he says, you get rid of all the sin, when he says get rid of all the sin means even punya. Punya is also a paap, because punya makes you to take birth. So from the Vedantic angle, even punya is a paap. Those who are running after paap will soon after run after, will soon run after punya. Those who are running after punya will soon run after paap. It's like pendulum. The pendulum, when it swings on the left, it is gathering momentum to swing after right. When it swings this time in the right direction, it's gaining momentum to swing in this direction. So if you have tatratva, you will be toggling between paap and punya. But when you dissolve the kartrutva through knowledge, by questioning, through ignorance, you, the atma out of ignorance has been identified with the prakriti, with the nature. Then you say, oh, I am a papi, I am a punyatma. You are neither a papi nor a punyatma. It is out of foolishness that you identified yourself with this. If you just withdraw and see, the same concept is what is said in Upanishads and everywhere. Bhagavad Gita is only the essence of the Upanishads. If you are able to be a Sakshi, in fact, when we do 13th chapter, you will see there is a beautiful verse there. He says, Upadrashta, Anumanta, Varta, Bhokta, Maheshwara. You can be very close to it and be a Upadrashta. Upa means near, Drashta means seeing. We permit it. Then we play various roles. Anumanta, then we become Bharta, then we become Bhokta. I am the enjoyer, enjoying the sin and the punya, all this. But actually, I am Maheshwara. Even while I am thinking myself to be the one who is going through all these things, actually, Atma is not going through anything. Swamiji gives an example. A wooden stick, when it is taken to the magnet, it is not attracted. Iron rod gets attracted to the magnet. But you tie the wooden stick and the iron rod and you take it to the magnet, it gets attracted. But even when it gets attracted, the wooden stick is not really attracted. So it is out of our foolishness that the I is being tied to the prakriti. As a result of which, we do various actions with this bhav. It is the bhav that is creating the whole thing. I explained to you when we studied verse number 6, 7, 8 of chapter 4, don't forget that. A smooth stone, cold stone is given in your hand. Or a charcoal is given in your hand, cold one. And you are being hypnotized slowly to believe that it is really, really hot, hot, and it's becoming very hot, very hot, very hot. Then you are developing that bhav that stone is hot, the charcoal is hot. Then what happens is, there comes a time when you are not able to hold it anymore. You drop it. Then afterwards, when you are brought out of hypnosis, you will see in your palm there will be a burn. How come you got burnt with the cold stone? Stone is cold. How come you got burnt? What really brought the effect? Bhav. You understand? So through ignorance, we develop this Ram Bhav, and out of that Bhav, we create Karma Bandhan. So if you want to really destroy the Karma Bandhan, you have to go and question this, who is this I really speaking? So that is why he says, he who has renounced actions by yoga, by uniting with the Atma, whose doubts are entered by knowledge, who is paused in the self, actions do not. He may be in the battlefield, actions doesn't bind him. He may be playing around gopis, his actions don't bind him. The other fellow may be sitting in meditation, but his Kartrutva Bhav is there. That action will bind him in this case.
Tasmadajnana sambhutam hristam jnanasinatmanah chitvainam yuktam shayam yogam atishto tishta bharata tasmadajnana sambhutam hristam jnanasinatmanah chitvainam samshayam yogam atishto tishta bharata. Uttishta,
you will hear this throughout the Gita. Uttishta, O Bharata. Uttishta means arise. Famous words of Swami Vivekananda. Arise, awake, and stop not till the goal is reached. We have the capacity to rise. That is why they say, arise. If we did not have the capacity to rise, they will not talk to us that at all. See, all of us have essentially risen from animal embodiment. Right? Science tells us that millions of years before, many, many millions of years before, single cell amoeba came into the picture. Before that, there was nothing. Then, after many millions of years later, worms. And then fishes, many, many millions of years later. Then amphibians. From amphibians, reptiles. And from reptiles, primates. And from primates, humans. And from humans, modern humans. Right? So if you see, we are very, very close to primates. And we are very close to reptiles. And many of the times, if we are left alone, we behave exactly like reptiles and primates. Seldom do we behave like human beings. Human being has the capacity to function as a human being or fall down and function like a reptile or a primate. Reptiles function on survival and reproductive instincts. We also function like that very often. So like primates also we function, we live in groups. And then when the primate grows, it goes to another group. The young male goes to another group from the chimpanzee group. Why? Because if it starts living in the same group, then it will start reproducing with his own sisters. That means the survival of the offshoots will be very little possibility. Therefore the male moved and later on the female started moving, male started remaining in the same group. So the females moved to another group. When the females moved to another group, that new group into which it is moved is not accepting it. So it starts bossing over, beating, thrashing, all sorts of things happen. Then slowly, slowly it is accepted into the group. Then when some other new chimpanzee comes, this chimpanzee, which was accepted recently, starts beating the new one. This is exactly what happens between mother-in-law and daughter-in-law. This is exactly what happens between students in the college. New set goes, ragging happens. Then the very same new set which got accepted and then becomes second year and third year, they start ragging. So if you look at it, we seldom function like human beings. Human being is in between God and animal. He can fall down to the level of animal, or he can rise himself to the level of divinity. This is the problem. Very often, every one of us mostly fall down to the level of and to fall, we don't need training because we have gone through that many times. We have been living like that all this while. So, if we have just left, we automatically fall down. So, he says, arise, O Bharata, arise, arise. You are a human being, you have the potential to rise. Look at it that way. You have a potential to rise from the human level to divinity. But unfortunately, what is happening is you are not using your potential. You are using your potential for all the small things. This is what they are saying. You have the potential to reach the infinity, but you are using that potential, unfortunately, to spend it in the small little things. You know, one of the research that has gone recently is about willpower. And this gentleman who had done research on it has said willpower is like muscle. If you utilize it in the areas which requires very little energy, you start spending your willpower there. So where you actually need to use the willpower will not be available to you. Like for example, first thing in the morning, you need that energy to be used for planning the days or months. Instead of that, if you start thinking about what shirt to wear, what pant to wear today, what shoes to wear, which car I should go, with whom should I go, small little things, if you start using willpower in the morning for these things, then when a real challenge confronts you, willpower is not available to you. That is why they say, before going to bed, previous day, itself plan these small little things. Don't waste your willpower in the morning for these small little things. In fact, in Vedanta we say, standardize your life as much as you can. Then there is no need to waste your willpower and ability to choose every day. Your energy is getting lost in thinking these frivolous things. When your energy is lost in thinking these frivolous things, it is not available for you to use it in the place where it is required. So this is what we are doing. There is tremendous potential in us to rise to the level of highest divinity, but we are wasting it in the useless areas. So he says, Tasmat, therefore. Now he is concluding. After giving explanations, now Lord Krishna is concluding. He says, Tasmat, therefore, cutting asunder. What should you cut? And with what should you cut? He says, cut it with the sword of knowledge. It is very, very sharp. It is sharper than the laser. The sword of knowledge. And what should you cut? The ignorance born doubt of the self.
cut the ignorance born doubt of the self with knowledge dwelling in your heart, be established in yoga. Arise, O Bharata. The 15th chapter also he talks about cutting asanga. Asanga shastrena vridena chitva. This cutting asanga he keeps on talking about, and to cut it you have to use the knowledge of, use the sword of knowledge. Knowledge could be interpreted as discrimination, which is born of awareness. But we seldom use our discrimination that is born of awareness. We always use doubt, which is born of ignorance. Discrimination is born in awareness. Doubt is born in ignorance. Remember this. Doubt goes on binding you. Discrimination, inquiry, awareness keeps on eliminating the doubts and eliminating all the karmas. So he says, cut as under, using the sword of knowledge, the awareness that you have, use that awareness in everything. Then there is no question of falling. And even if you had fallen, the way to get back is through awareness, is through knowledge, is through discrimination, is through vichara, is through inquiry. Like Adi Shankara says, what is viveka? Nitya, anitya, viveka, vichara. Inquire. We are all the time caught up in the dvandvas. What are the dvandvas? Sukha, dukkha. We don't question, who is this wanting to be dwelling all the time in sukha? Who is this wanting to be awarding dukkha? We never question. The moment you question that, you are going beyond sukha and dukkha. That is what he said. Cut asunder the sword of knowledge. And inquiry comes when you stand apart. When you don't stand apart, no inquiry comes. You get washed away. A scientist who is standing apart in the laboratory is inquiring objectively. Others are all lost in the world. So therefore Vedanta says, early in the morning, make your own house a laboratory. Stand apart with awareness, question, discriminate, analyze, think, watch. Then slowly, slowly, you are separating Atma from Anatma. Then, when you go in front of the object, the ability the object had before to delude you is not the same ability that it has now, because you have been sharpening the saw. A fellow who has not been sharpening the saw, when he goes in front of the object, is completely overpowered. Therefore, every day you must do this sadhana of cutting it asunder, sharpening the sword of discrimination. Otherwise, ignorance takes over. When the ignorance takes over, doubts come. And when doubts come, you create further samsara, karma bandha. So he is talking about cutting it. Now cutting that you have to do, Guru cannot do. Your karma bandha, which has been created by the fiction of your imagination, can only be removed with discrimination by you. If Guru starts doing tapasya, your ignorance will not be removed. Your ignorance can be removed only by you cutting it with the sword of discrimination. Guru can help you to sharpen the saw, but with that saw you have to cut it. I can't cut it for you, others can't cut it for you, you have to cut it yourself. That is another message he is giving him. Tasma, therefore, cutting as under with the sword of knowledge. So when he says knowledge here, very often what people think is reading books.
and has gathered more and more intelligence from books. More and more intelligence from books when you gather, you become more and more ignorant. When Huxley was asked, are you a voracious reader? He said, no. If I was a voracious reader like you, then I would be as ignorant as you are. What is happening is, collecting information is not knowledge. That is not what he's talking about as knowledge here. In fact, collecting information continues to keep you in ignorance for long. The problem is, because you say, I've been in the right path collecting information. So you don't even have a doubt that you're ignorant. You are very clear. I know. Josh Billing says, the trouble with most folks is not their ignorance, but their knowing so many things which ain't so. So you go on, see, this is the problem, especially nowadays. Sometimes I also feel, when you question a little deeply, maybe conducting these kind of classes are just more of disservice than service. If you look at it from that angle, in the sense, you are propagating more of information. When people get equipped with information, instead of really going into the search, they stop their search because they started knowing. Now, any Tom, Dick and Harry you ask, they'll say, I am Atma, not body, mind. So much this knowledge has been propagated. If you switch on the television, there are some, I don't know, 50 channels, spiritual channels. Everywhere, Aptomasi is spoken. So now when you see like this, we keep on hearing like this, the Tattvamasi, when you hear it, should do something to you. Now nothing happens. Nothing can it do to you. Because you are considering knowledge to be information. So that is why I am cautioning you here when he says, therefore, cut as under the sword of knowledge is ignorance born samsara, is ignorance born doubt of the self. He is not talking about information. He is talking about a discrimination that is born out of awareness. Inquiry. As long as the self-inquiry is not happening, you don't get rid of this samsara. You don't go out of this samsara. You in fact get caught in the samsara, collecting more and more books, more and more information, and remain far from the truth. That's the problem. Your knowing itself starts becoming a shield between you and God. That is why some of the jnanis call information as dust, waste. Like you collect dust in a dustbin. You've been collecting information in your personality. You don't need so much of information to realize the self. You need so much of information to keep you away from the self. You are Atma. How much information do you need for that? But by collecting more and more information, you are not experiencing the Atma. You are holding on to the fiction, not the reality. In fact, many of us say that we really worship God. We are in true love with God and all that. If God really were to come in front of us, we will start doubting Him also. So in other words, these are very deep things that Lord Krishna is saying in this chapter. So don't misunderstand knowledge to be length. It is not the length. It is the depth. questioning the very foundation. The I has been rubbed in me in this Janma. Supposing you don't believe about previous Janmas, at least in this Janma. What is this I? This I is nothing but collection, isn't it? All the memories of the past I've collected. I am so-and-so's daughter, born on so-and-so date. This is my bank balance. This is my educational background. This is a collection of so many things put together. So this I today is what? It's a crowd. Ego is a crowd. Remember this. That is why it is very weak. The real I, Atma, is not crowd. It's alone. It's aloneness. That is why it's very strong. Always crowd is weak. A weak fellow wants to resort to crowd. Strong fellow is not resorting to crowd. So the weak ego is a collection. It's just a bundle of memories of the past put together is ego. So that ego we never question, who is this I? We are so busy collecting more and more, and ego wants to swell by collecting more and more experiences. So that this is me, that is me, this much I have, that much I have. It wants to be in the crowd, collecting more and more, swelling. And very intelligently the ego plays. When you say ego should be destroyed, ego will say, okay, I'll destroy myself. And by intelligently it will say, I'm doing tapasya. But tapasya I am doing. There also it hides. I am giving. Sacrificing. I am giving. In all these things also ego hides. The most difficult thing is to destroy the ego. Ego starts getting identified with benevolence, with distributing wealth, with doing tapasya, with reading books, with conducting classes, with doing so many things. That ego is very difficult to remove because it is hiding deep inside the so-called benevolence. So you need to be really awakened to cut it as and grow. Because before you really keep yourself awake, it starts growing and hiding here and there. If you really want to conquer ego, you have to be awake. But information plays the role of drugs. Now when little drugs goes in, what does it do? It gives you sleep. So what do? We go on collecting information. The information starts becoming like drugs. And then we think we are close conquering the ego. But actually the ego is using you rather than you using the ego. Therefore he says, keep awake, arise, be alert. Destroying ego is not easy. You have to be alert. Any destruction, like a soldier to destroy the enemies, he needs to be alert. Because very often nowadays even the enemy fellows may be dressed up like your camp. Isn't it? Enemy fellow, when he is dressed up like you are in your military dress, if you are not alert, how will you remove him? So therefore ego plays all sorts of tricks. Therefore he says, arise, O Bharata. Be awakened, be alert, be aware. With awareness, use discrimination. And with discrimination, question the ego. What is this ego? Who is this ego? The moment I question, then I start realizing that it is a fiction. The reality is a fiction. So a lot of us don't reflect on the knowledge. We are only going on gathering more and more information. It will not help us. That is why Mahatmas keep on telling us, Shravana మనన స్ట్రిక్ట్లీ స్పీకింగ్ యూ డోంట్ నీడ్ మోర్ దెన్ వన్ టెక్స్ట్. వన్ టెక్స్ట్ ఇస్ లాక్స్ అండ్ వన్ వర్స్ ఇస్ ఎనఫ్. ఇట్స్ ఎ క్వశ్చన్ ఆఫ్ డిగింగ్, యూజింగ్ దట్ వర్స్, డిగింగ్ అండ్ గోయింగ్ విత్ ఇట్. బట్ వీ ఆర్ నాట్ దట్ సెల్ఫ్ సఫిషియెంట్. So you want more and more and more verses, then more and more scriptures. This scripture is khatam karne ke baad that scripture, that scripture khatam karne ke baad that. Seldom are we really interested in destroying the king. So therefore when he concludes he says, arise, be aware. If you are not in a state of awareness, you automatically start functioning like an animal. In fact, you become worse than animal. Because animals, if you observe, they're showing this Discovery and Animal Planet and all these channels. A tiger will be chasing a deer. A deer will try to escape itself from the tiger. And when it finally escapes, tiger has become tired, the deer has escaped. Within few seconds or minutes, you will find the deer very coolly eating grass and all that. Very coolly. In your case, supposing somebody was chasing you with a gun to kill you, and you somehow escaped and you went and locked yourself inside your room, can you be cool after that? We will become more agitated. We don't know from anywhere we go, that fellow will be coming in our mind, isn't it? So we become worse than animals. That is why J. Krishnamurti said, animals are unconsciously perfect. Human beings are consciously imperfect. So animals just function on instinct. That action is over, they coolly go to the next. In the human being it is not like that. Something that happened 10 years ago, we go on thinking about it. We have the potential to plan for the next 100 years, next 200 years. But we use it to worry about what happened 20 years ago. We don't rise. So the neuroscience tells us that we have what is called as prefrontal cortex. This prefrontal cortex could be used for planning 10 years, 20 years ahead. But we are using that prefrontal cortex for worrying about what happened 10 years ago or 20 years ago. So if you are left alone, you will start destroying yourself. Therefore you have to become conscious and aware. And with willpower, you have to use your discrimination and question the very I. And when you remove the ignorance about I, the Kartrutva goes. When Kartrutva and Bhoktrutva goes, all the karma goes. Instead of that, if you go on going on various pilgrimages and collecting more and more punya, you think, I don't know, maybe I've done 1,000 baap, so now if I go on to 1,001 punya, I'll become ordinary, nothing will happen. Because your base is Kartrutva. Therefore he says, go to the base and destroy the very base. When the base is destroyed, the effect doesn't exist.
Om Tat Sat Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su Upanishatsu Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastre Shri Krishna Arjuna Sambhade Jnana Karma Sanyasa Yogo Nama Chaturtho Dhyayah.
Om Tat Sat. Om, that is real. That Atma is your real personality. Thus, in the Upanishads of the glorious Bhagavad Gita, the signs of the eternal, the scripture of yoga, the dialogue between Sri Krishna and Arjuna ends the fourth chapter entitled Yoga of Renunciation of Action in Wisdom. Bhagavad Gita is nothing but the essence of the Upanishads. And Bhagavad Gita is the conversation between Lord Krishna, the Guru, Arjuna, the Shishya. In that conversation, the fourth chapter entitled Jnana Karma Sanyasa Yoga has ended.
only we have gone through the verses of the fourth chapter. The verses have not really gone into us. This to remind ourselves, though we have concluded going through the verses, we say that we still have not completed reflecting on those verses. So to remind ourselves, we say that we have just begun. This is a tradition. So out of humility, we let's go and chant verse number 1 together. Just to remind ourselves that we've just begun the chapter. Chapter 4, verse number 1. Let's do it together.
Shri Bhagavan Vacha, Shri Bhagavan Vacha, Imam Vivasvate Yogam, Imam Vivasvate Yogam, Proktavanaham Avyayam, Proktavanaham Avyayam, Vivasvanmanave Praha, Manurikshvakave Bhraved, Manurikshvakave Bhraved, Shri Bhagavan Vacha, Imam Vivasvate Yogam, Proktavanaham Avyayam, Vivasvanmanave Praha, Manurikshvakave Bhraved. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadhaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.